Hey everybody, I'm Stacy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Stacy.
I feel very short up here. This is weird. I'm not short. Wow. It's so funny because I wasn't nervous and then she starts talking. I'm like, what? Like my heart starts, like I feel my heart, you know, start pounding in my throat. And I thought I was immune to that already. What an honor and what a privilege. Thank you for allowing me to do this, you know. Once upon a time, you would not have asked me to tell my story, you know. Once upon a time, I would have freaked out and had a panic attack at the thought of getting up here in front of you people because I was so worried about what you thought of me and all of those things. Today, it's none of my business what you guys think of me. And that's true most of the time, you know. A little bit about me. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley in California. And I don't ever remember not feeling like I was missing, you know. Growing up was normal. My family life, nobody, you know, really drank in my family. It was really, you know, just the normal dysfunctional family where both parents hated each other. And that was the norm, you know, and they liked to fight a lot. And finally, they got divorced, thank God. And my dad left, and then we, you know, it was so funny because I feel like we were like the statistics, you know. It was 1978 when everybody, you know, was getting divorced, and we moved into these condos, and that is where the fun began for me, because that is where I found my people. You know, we were a bunch of latchkey kids, man, single parent homes, and we just ran wild. We weren't really up to no good at first, and then we, of course, you know, over time, left to our own devices. There's really nothing left to do but, you know, find things that aren't good for you. And for me, I was looking for something to make me not feel how I felt. I never felt okay in my own skin. I always felt really uncomfortable. I felt like everybody else got it and I just didn't. I was missing something, you know, like everybody else fit in, everybody else, you know, were okay, it seemed, you know, but I just couldn't find that okay. And so of course, I started, you know, experimenting with, you know, things outside of myself. You know, I started smoking pot when I was 8, because I thought I was cool and I was trying to fit in. So stupid. It's just mortifying, the things I, you know, I just go, oh. And by the time I was 11, I was ditching school. I was smoking pot, just trying to fit in with that cool crowd. And of course, that too didn't make me happy. And then by the time I was in junior high, that took off. You know, I had a lot of that, a lot of I will never do. I don't know if you guys relate to that. I will never touch that. I will never do that. And shockingly enough, I did all those things that I said I would never do. And for me growing up, I saw my girlfriends drink and it used to freak me out because we would, you know, get Boone's Farm and whatever we could from our parents, you know, cupboard. I don't even know, or somebody bought it. It's not like our parents had Boone's Farm or whatever, but somehow we had it. And, you know, and they would drink and they would do these things that scared me. You know, I was very much about being in control, and they used to get drunk and throw up and like take their clothes off and get with boys, and like that freaked my brain out, and I said, I will never do that. I will never drink. Well, I didn't drink. So I found other substances that gave me that same feeling, you know, that didn't make me so insane. I wasn't out of control. I was in control. And so at the age of 14, it was the summer of ninth grade going into 10th grade, and somebody gave me some stuff that I said I would never do, and I knew that night. I lied, I cheated. It was just in one night I did all of those things, and I thought, this is for me. I've never found a substance. Not because I did those things, because of how it made me feel inside, and I just went, this is it. This is it. I don't need anything else. And so needless to say, I was off and running. I dropped out of high school. I mean, I kept trying to go. Like, I kept... I kept trying, you know, like 10th grade year started and I would like, I'd be gung ho, I'm gonna do this and I can do this and I can wake up and I can go to school. And yeah, that lasted for, you know, a couple of days. I just couldn't get it together. I just couldn't get it together. And so, needless to say, my life was spiraling out of control. I had, yeah, I was not living the life of a normal 15-year-old. You know, once again, I said I would never do this other thing, and I started doing that other thing. And by this time, I had a boyfriend who was beating me up. I had, the cops were now involved by accident, and so they were trying to get me to press charges for this person who was beating me up. And by the way, I thought that that was normal. I didn't know that your boyfriend shouldn't hit you, like, and you shouldn't hit him, and you guys shouldn't be this. You know, I didn't know that. And I thought that that was the norm, and doesn't everybody have a boyfriend that does that? And in that time, my life literally was, you know, I had 29 and a half credits to my name. I was 17 years old at this point, and life was not going well. Let's just say that. It was a little out of control, and I just remember sitting there praying to a God I did not understand and said, please do not let me wake up in the morning. Please, I can't do this another day because I can't stop and I don't want to do this again. And one night I went into my mom's room at 5 o'clock in the morning and said, you know, I have a problem. And she got me into rehab. This is hilarious. I was 17 years old and I sat around at this outpatient rehab and there was a bunch of old people. A bunch of old people are probably in their 20s and 30s, and I thought, I am so different. I love it, you know, like I'm going to my mom at 5 in the morning saying I have a problem, I can't stop, my life is unmanageable. And I sit in those rooms and was like, you people are so jacked up. Like your lives are a mess. 17, I had nothing to lose. You know, I didn't lose anything, I didn't have anything to lose. You know, I weighed 98 pounds, thought I looked good. Oh, it's just disgusting. And so, you know, I did that, you know, and for about a year and a half, I stayed dry. And that was a really good time, let me tell you about it. It was a really good time with a 17-year-old brain and this disease of alcoholism running rampant through it. And I was insane. And so finally, in California, we call them Eskimos. So I met a guy who, of course, had what I wanted. So I followed him into the rooms of AA. I was still sober. And he was sober also, and so I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got a sponsor, and worked the steps to the best of my ability. But the funny thing is, I had never drank, so I wasn't an alcoholic, but I was. Does that make sense? I knew that if I drank, you know, but I couldn't relate. I never conceded to my innermost self, and for me, going to CA, I didn't find it there. That was not where I found my comfort zone. AA was. But I was always on the peripheral, you know, because I was always unique and different because my story was different. And I never really, like, don't ask me my story because I can't tell you it's a drug-a-log. It's not a drunk-a-log, you know. And I was different. And I was so different that I continued to, you know, like I said, I worked the steps to the best of my ability and I stayed sober for 11 and a half years. And oh my gosh, I was so, I just look at that 11 and a half years, I never changed my behavior. You know, I got dry, but I never changed my behavior, and I was still that same sick little girl who walked in the rooms. You know, I was still using men. I had lived in states, so many states, because I couldn't get away from me. It's like I was like, "Oh, you're moving to Colorado? I'm gonna go to Colorado too. Let's go, me and my girlfriends. We're just gonna move to Colorado. Oh, you're gonna move to Oregon? I'm gonna move to Oregon with you." I moved all over, and every time I'd be there for a couple months, going, "There I am." You know, oh my gosh, she followed me. And I thought that if I moved here, things would be different because I was going to change. You know, this was going to change me. And honest to God, I never found out that it didn't. You know, I still was like, please make it work, make it work. I'm desperate. Oh, and it just didn't work. And thank God it didn't work. And so by the time I was 11 and a half years sober, I was 29 years old, and I was hanging out with a bunch of people doing things that I don't shouldn't have been doing, and I got a haircut, you know? And thank God. And that's the truth today. I can say thank you, God, that I was allowed to do that and get back here because the life that I have today is beyond my wildest dreams. And so I went out for a year and a half, and yeah. Hilarious. Okay, so I said, I'm going to do this drinking thing. I've heard about it for 11 and a half years. These people, really? Really? Like, that's my thinking. That's the God's honest truth. I was like, I'm going to find alcohol that's not going to make me sick so that I can get that buzz that everybody in these rooms were talking about. Hello? That's not normal. That's just, you know, right there should have said ding, ding, ding. But it didn't. I said, I'm on a mission. I was on a mission. And so I tried every kind of drink you could think of, and they all tasted disgusting because alcohol tastes terrible. It is horrific. It's disgusting. And I have a fear, by the way, of throwing up. So my mission in life is to not throw up. So if that alcohol is starting to, that taste of that just didn't, I was like, okay, I gotta try something different. So I was on a mission to find an alcoholic beverage that tasted okay and would rest in my stomach and get me that buzz. So I was, you know, I had a mission. And one night I was down in Santa Monica with a friend and I kept drinking his drink and I didn't know what it was, but it tasted really good. And then I got that magic feeling that you guys talk about. And I went, oh my God, this is it. I mean, truly, I went, oh, this is it. And I said, how do we get more? He said, everything's closed. And I said, well, we can go to like 7-Eleven or like a gas station. They sell alcohol. And he said, not liquor. And I was like, oh. So from that point on, I made sure that, you know, I drank that drink, whatever that mixture he had, which was vodka and cranberry with lime. Well, I didn't know you had to eat before you drink. Like, there's this whole, like, I'm 29 years old learning how to drink like people did when they were like 15 or whatever age, you know? And here I am going, okay, so I have to eat before I drink, but then I can not drink. I got to find a way to be able to get that liquor in me somehow. So one night, well, so I was drinking those vodka cranberries and they were working. Oh, they were working. It was awesome. It was on. I was living in Santa Barbara and I'm going out to clubs. I'm 30 and I'm hanging. Everyone's like 21, 22. Like, I just had no sense of reality, you know? Like, I'm 30 and I'm learning how to drink and everyone's 21 and I think I'm just fun. Like, no idea. Like, the idiot that I am, I look back and just go, oh my God, you know? But so be it. And so I had to demoralize myself. So here I am going out to these clubs and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And one night we go to see this band play and we start out at this bar and I'm drinking my vodka cranberry. By the way, I have to tell you this. I have to, you know, preface this with, I have a wig on. I have a, oh God, I don't know what I was thinking. I had my hair all pinned up. It was very short. And I had a red wig on that was like down to here and straight hair, red wig on. And so we go out to this club. And by the end of the night, I didn't know, this is where I found out about the eating thing. I was so sick because we had smoked a little pot on the way down the railroad tracks, going to the club. I get into the club. It's very hot. There's a lot of people. I start to get nauseous. Well, when I get nauseous, all bets are off. I don't know what's going to happen. Like, all I know is I got to lay down somewhere and I'm going to be sick and I have to unbutton my pants. And that's all I know. And that's just how things go. Well, you're at a club. That's not appropriate behavior. So nobody wants to take care of me because I'm 30 and I should be able to take care of myself. And so little, you know, lo and behold, I'm out front of the club. I'm on the concrete on the sidewalk, laying there, my wig is off, my girlfriend, I don't even know how much time had elapsed, she comes out, she's like, you can't stay here, you have to move down the road because they're gonna call the cops. I'm like, okay. So she takes me down the road to behind some car, and I'm sitting by a car by myself, you know, dry heaving, and I'm thinking, this sucks, this really sucks. I'm going to do it differently next time. That's all I could think of is like, how am I going to get home? Thank God somebody came and got me a cab and got me home and they gave me a barf bag. It was just lovely. So what I learned from that was I had to eat before I went out. That's what I learned. I had to eat something before I went out to go do my, you know, night out on the town. And so by the end, so, you know, things just progressively got worse. I found other things to do and, you know, swore I would never do. There I was doing them again. I wasn't going to do this. And by the way, my drug dealer's house was across the street. I had been sober in Santa Barbara too for a lot of years. And I knew all the sober people in Santa Barbara. It's a very small small community. It's a small town with a small AA community. So my drug dealer is right across the street from a men's sober living where I had spoke at. So anyway, so here I am. It's many, many mornings had I sat across the street from that sober living, you know, gacked out of my mind and just disgusted and knowing they're all sober in there, you know, just, oh, you know, God just kept, you know, little things were just, you know, everywhere. And so one more time I said I wasn't going to, you know, I'm just going to go. I'm just going to drink. I couldn't go home. I would wake up in the morning and my first thought was, when can I drink? When can I eat so that I can start drinking? Because I had to manage. I had to control and manage my life. And so so I learned how to do that. And I couldn't go home if there wasn't vodka in my refrigerator. And I said to myself this one night, I said, my sister was coming in with her brand new baby up to Santa Barbara. They were in from New Mexico. And I was supposed to be, you know, spry and ready for them to be here in the morning. And I said, I'm just going to go out till 12. I'm just going to drink and, you know, I might do a little of that white stuff, but I'm going to be home by 12. It was 5 o'clock in the morning when I got home. And by the way, before all this, a couple weeks before, I had prayed to God, please help me hit a high bottom. I pray as I'm high, coming down, drinking, please God help me hit a high bottom, you know. Please bring people back into my life that are in the program. And, you know, and I shared this the other day that my whole entire drinking and using career was 3.5 years. And I have no doubt that I am an alcoholic, you know, like it didn't, my threshold for pain is very, very, very low. And I couldn't take who I was. I couldn't take having a consciousness of Alcoholics Anonymous in my brain and going out and running my game. It doesn't work. You know, I remember thinking when I had made the decision to go out there and drink, I said, oh, thank God I don't have to pray all the time. I don't have to freaking do the third step prayer all the time. I don't have to, you know, be connected to God. Oh my God. I was excited because those things were really weighing me down. They were weighing me down. And oh my gosh, so insane. So, you know, here I was, I'm sleeping with the upstairs neighbor, have another boyfriend guy who's in the program who, you know, blah, blah, blah. It just, it's all not working out. Like things are just, worlds are colliding and that doesn't work for me. You know, it's just, they're all, it's just running amok. And I just sat there and was like, I'm so tired. I'm so sick and tired of being who I am. And I just want it to stop. I wanted to just take a knife and just stab my stomach. It's like, I just want my insides gone. All my insides gone. And I didn't really think that there was a solution here, but I knew that you guys had something that I could never get. Does that make sense? Like you guys had it and I could never attain it. And I was just like sitting there praying, going, please help me hit a high bottom. And so God saw fit that, you know, answers my prayers. I hit a high bottom and all of a sudden, all these people from AA are like back in my life. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. What, you know, why? I don't know. You prayed for it, you know, bonehead. And so sitting there and so I, of course, hook back up with an ex-boyfriend who's in the program. And I got a sponsor. So I have to call my mom. It's 5 o'clock. It's now 7 o'clock in the morning and say, you can't come up here. You can't come up here. You can't come up here with my sister and her new baby because I've been out all night and I'm disgusting and I got to get sober. And she was like, okay. And so that day I went to a meeting and I got a sponsor and she was this 23-year-old girl and she just had her stuff together. And I didn't understand how at 23, because at 23, you know, I didn't have my stuff together. The only thing I had, seriously, the only thing I had with that 11 and a half years was 11 and a half years, and that I was young. And I rode that. I was young, and I had sobriety, and I'm so cool. Really? Like, that's the cool thing is to, you know, be young and have sobriety? And I thought it was. And so, you know, I was so scared that I was going to get back in here and feel like I did in that old sobriety. And so my sponsor. Oh, that poor girl. I called her constantly. I'm feeling like I did in my old sobriety. She's like, oh, okay. you're going to feel like that. You just sit and, you know, you're going to be okay. And I was like, what do you want me to do? What do you want me? She's like, nothing, just sit and be uncomfortable. And I was like, what? What kind of solution is that? That is not a solution. I need something to make this go away. That's how I live. I make this feeling go away inside of me. And she's like, well, you're just going to sit. And I was like, you need to be fired. That is the worst information you could have given to an alcoholic like me. And what she taught me was that I got to sit and I got to be uncomfortable and that it passed. I'd never, 31 years old, I'd never known that I could sit and be uncomfortable and it was going to pass. I'd never known that. That was like profound to me. And so I got back into the rooms and I got sober, and my life, the weekend I got sober, we were having a convention. I was told to go sell raffle tickets and to get out of myself. So I'm literally like 2 days sober. Would you like to buy a raffle ticket? Going up to people, like shuffling and shaking as I'm asking, you know? And it was like, I thought, she's so, who does that? Who makes somebody who's like me go out there and ask people to buy a raffle ticket when I'm brand new sober, you know? And I would have done the same thing. Get your ass out there and you go be a service somewhere. You know, you get out of yourself. And so she drilled that into me. And that whole entire, she changed my life. I feel like she was an angel sent down from heaven for me. She changed my life, and I listened to her. I listened to I listened to most of what she said to me, and I did the things that she told me to do. She told me to get 5 commitments a week at meetings, and I did it. She told me I waited tables because that's what I did, because I wasn't going to be like those people and work 9 to 5 and be a slave to... What an excuse. You know what I mean? It was like, no, I was scared to go get a job because I'm stupid and I'm dumb and I'm all these things and they would never hire me. You know? Oh, I have 10 years of, not even 10 years. I don't even know. I've gone to like 10 JCs. I cannot even tell you if those, what kind of credits that accumulates to, you know? And I don't care today. You know? I don't care. But at the time she's like, you need to go get a job. And I was like, you mean like a real job, like a resume, like a job? And she's like, a job. And I said, oh my gosh, I freaked, you know? And I was like, who? No one's gonna hire me. So I actually got a job. And let me tell you how I complained. They're paying me $12 an hour. And let me tell you how better then I was than their $12. I just cracked myself up, you guys, because I literally, like, I have a GED, and how dare they? Don't they know how valuable I am? I should be making $30 an hour, not no $12 an hour, and I'm so appalled by this. And so, oh, man, so it was so good for me, and it was so humbling, and I got to stay there, and that job led to another job, you know, and I was actually like a worker among workers, and I was going to meetings, and my life was getting different, and I was starting to be okay inside of my own skin, and I wasn't doing these old behaviors, and I didn't know, like, you get self-esteem from taking esteemable actions, like, I had heard that, but I never did it, you know, and so I started doing those things, and I started getting okay. I started getting the magic that you people had, you know, and I had those commitments, and I did everything she told me to do, you know, in that first year. I just remember taking that cake and crying and thinking, this should be for her, you know, this is her cake. And she's like, you did it. You know, I lived my life. I wanted you guys to do all the work, and then I wanted the rewards. That's how I lived. I said, nothing wrong with that. I was a user, and that's what I did. And that was no longer okay, you know, that was no longer okay for her. And so she taught me how to not do that. You know, I take the actions and I reap the benefits. And wow, I had no idea what I was missing out on. And so I did all of those things, and living in Santa Barbara, had my group of, you know, women and my, you know, life is going really good. It's now I'm 2 years sober and I have this better job, and I go up to Chicago to go visit my dad. My dad's living in Chicago, and a girlfriend of mine living in Santa Barbara used to live in Chicago, hooks me up with a friend of hers, and I had a girlfriend with me, and so we hung out and stuff, and lo and behold, he's my husband now, and
if you would have ever told me that I would be living in Georgia,
married with a dog and 2 kids, I would have said, what? You're crazy. And I wouldn't have it any other way, you know. Because I work the steps, you know, and my poor sponsor, again, God, she was such an angel. I came to her with my four step, and it was 70 pages front and back. You know, she's like, whoa. I literally, you guys, I was so, didn't ever want to go back there, that I was so thorough that I put down, I had a stain on the carpet that I was living in, the house I was living in, and I had that stain on my carpet, on my four step, because it was on my four step I resented it, because I thought that people were, when they walked into the house, thought that I put that stain there and that I was white trash. So that stain was on my four step. That's how thorough I was. I wasn't joking around. Like, this was going to get done. And so it took us a couple days to do that. And I didn't know on the four step that there was a fourth column. I didn't know about that fourth column. I had never done a four step like that. And it changed my life. That was the beginning of being rocketed into the fourth dimension. I lived my life as a victim. As a victim. It was my parents' fault because they blah blah didn't give me, I was a sieve. They could have given me all the love they had inside of themselves and I would have just come right out. It didn't matter. I was an alcoholic. There was nothing, not to let them, I just lived my life that they were, I was who I was because of them. It was their fault. And when I did that fourth column, that is not the case. Whoa, is that not the case? And I got a freedom I cannot even begin to tell you. I saw my part. I saw who I was for the first time in my life and said, whoa, okay, this is how I've been living my life for 31 years. And wow, no wonder my life's pretty screwed up, you know, because it's all about me. It's all about me. And what can I get from you? That is how I lived my life. And wow, so in that, I did that. And then I did 5 and 6 and 7, 8, you know, I did the rest of them, and I making those amends. I mean, I cannot even tell you, that was profound for me also, going back and humbling myself and saying, I stole from you. That's demoralizing. You know, I had a lot of, for me, that's like, I can't even explain it. Like, that's what living is about for me, is seeing my part and being able to make amends for my part. And seeing my parents in a different light, I had never seen them just as the human beings that they were. I never let them off the hook. You know, you had to be this, you had to be that, and for me. And half the things they did weren't about me. But I was so important and I was so big, how could they not be about me? They weren't. My parents were just living their lives, doing the best they could with what they had. You know, and I just never saw it like that. And I got to call them and say, hey, your daughter's an ass, you know? Like, I did a lot of things to you that weren't cool, and oh my gosh, you know? And my heart hurts, and today I make living amends to them. And I don't tell my mom off. Oh God, I was a horrific child, by the way. I didn't even talk about all my anger issues and my throwing things and breaking things and punching holes in walls and terrorizing my whole family. I used to beat up my sister and beat up my mom. Really? Yeah, totally normal. And they're always like sticking me in therapy going, please help her, you know. There was no help. There actually was no help for me. I was just like, you know, I was just give her some alcohol and drugs and she'll be good to go. And my mom should have just given me a beer at the age of like 8. But yeah, I don't even know what time it is. Okay, we're good on time. So I married this man, Jim. And the illusions, this is what I love. Who I thought he was, he didn't tell me who he was. Who I thought he was this real estate agent living in downtown Chicago, and he had his stuff together, and he's going to meetings. And so as I got to know him, that really wasn't the case. And so, but I still wanted the illusion, you know, and it's just so, this disease is insane. You know, this head of mine that likes to tell me stories, and I like to believe those stories, and then I don't want to believe reality or acceptance. And so needless to say, I've accepted, and he isn't all those things. And he's just a human being, you know, just a human being trying to get by just like I am. And then we got married, we bought a house, this disgusting house in the valley, and we fixed it up. And in this time, oh, I got pregnant, and that was another thing I didn't think I'd ever have, was kids. I didn't want them. I saw all my friends have them, and I saw how they kind of like took over their whole lives, and it became all about the kid, and I couldn't even imagine, because it was all about me, how could it be about a kid, you know? And I remember judging all of my friends. You know, they're all single moms now because they're all divorced from those lovely men they met and had kids with. And I was cleaning out, I was 26 years old, I'm helping my girlfriend clean out her Astro minivan, right? She's got these two little ones, they're under two. Her minivan was disgusting. I mean, disgusting. There was, I don't even know, she had ants in the minivan, okay? She had ants in her minivan. And I'm helping her scrub it down, and I'm just like, oh, you know, grossing out. Ha! Careful what I judge, because let me tell you, I've had ants in my minivan. I had ants in my minivan. And I was like, oh my God, I have become my girlfriend's. And I don't know what's in the third row of my minivan. And you know what? I don't care. I don't care. It can sit there. If it's going to have ants, it's going to have ants. And I just think that's hilarious. So I got married. It was the most amazing day of my life. And you know what I forget a lot is that sobriety afforded me all of these things. You know, I wouldn't be married if I didn't have sobriety, if I didn't work the steps, if I didn't do this deal, if I didn't become the woman that I am today. I wouldn't have had any of those things. I mean, and I say this all the time. It's like, the truth is, I should be living in a trailer, if I had a home, with some guy who beats me, you know, maybe had a couple teeth left, don't really know, if I was even alive, you know, if I was even alive. And I just go, wow, you know, my life is amazing from where it should be. I have two kids. He conned me into doing it again, having another child. I mean, that's the truth, because I am mentally unstable, and like, I totally know that. Like, I can't do hormones. I can't have hormones be in my body, and so being pregnant was not a good time. And I seriously thought I was going to lose my mind, and I really did. And it was very unhappy times, and I said, I will never do this again. And when he was two, my husband said, we can't have an only child. And I said, I see nothing wrong with having an only child. Only child, we can adopt. There are a lot of options out there today. And he said, we just can't have an only child. And I was like, why? What's this thing with an only? He's like, he's going to be spoiled, and he's going to grow up all screwed up. And I was like, well, he probably has those options anyway, you know, with us as parents. Like, who cares, you know? And he's like, we have to have another kid. And I was like, oh my God. So I got pregnant again, and once again, not good times, you know. I was off my rocker, you know, and I had to call my girlfriend and say, I feel like I'm going to lose it. I really and truly felt like I was going to die at times, because I was so mentally unstable. And she's like, you know, you can take meds while you're pregnant. I was like, what? I didn't know you could actually do something for your psychosis. But I didn't. And I stuck it out, because that's the kind of person I am. I stuck it out, and had a beautiful, beautiful daughter. And, you know, and I had these perfect kids. They come out off. My kids come out Mexican. No one's Mexican in our family. My kids come out Hispanic when they're born, and then they turn into Eskimos, and then they morph into the people that they are today. It is the strangest. Like, my husband, when I had my son, was like, what the hell is going on? He's like a little Mexican baby. And I said, I have no idea. I have no idea what's happening with our genes. I don't know. I can't really take the whole blame for that one. So it was very bizarre. They come out with black hair, and they're little Hispanic babies, and then they morph to Eskimos, and then they morph into the little kids that they look like today. Very bizarre. And and I dealt with postpartum in sobriety, and, you know, and because of this program, I had a solution. I didn't have to sit there and be like, I'm going to kill my kids, and I didn't have to stay in that today, you know? I was able to call people and reach out and say, hey, I'm not doing okay. Not doing okay. Feeling a little psycho. Okay. Let's get into action. What can you do? And I took the actions to take away the psychosis, you know? And wow, did life throw, you know, I feel like God threw me a curveball giving me these kids, because we made a decision that I was going to be a stay-at-home mom. Well, to me, stay-at-home moms have their stuff together. Like, they, you know, they have their stuff together. They like their kids. They like their kids, and they want to play with their kids, and they want to... I mean, that's the truth. That's the story I've made up in my mind, that this is what a stay-at-home mom does. They love on those kids. They play with the kids. They want to do things with the kids, and that has not ever been the case for me. I look at them, and I think, oh my God, what am I doing with you today? You know, when they were little, I could just carry them and they could go with me everywhere. But now, like, they have personalities and they want to do their own things and they want to go places and they want me to play basketball and they want me to get out there and be with them. And there's mosquitoes and, oh, or get on the floor and do arts and crafts or something like that. And you know what this program has taught me? Get the hell out of yourself and go do it. Just go do it, you know? I just got to do it. I just got to suit up and show up. And there are so many times, you guys, where I'm just like, I just need you to fend for yourselves. Just feed yourselves. Do whatever it is. Just go run amok. I don't care. And at the same time, I'm such a controlling freakazoid that I'm like, where are you going? What are you doing? I got to micromanage every little tiny thing, you know? And it's just those extremes. When I'm spiritually fit, life is good. You know, when I'm connected to my higher power, my life is good. And those kids are not so big and terrorizing to me, you know? And I share this a lot, you know, I would come downstairs, I would do all my prayer and meditation and walk downstairs and then turn my will and my life over to my husband, my kids, and my dog, you know? I would be like, okay, I just was totally spiritual and now I'm a total insane, you know? I'm totally insane. Take over, kids, you know? And they're like these big monsters to me, you know, that rule my life. And oh my gosh, So there's a lot of acceptance in that, you know. By the way, we lived in California and we were like, we're not living here. My mom is really close. My mom lived very close to us when we lived in the valley, and which was great, but at the same time, she was really close. So we decided to move to Arizona. And so we moved to Arizona and we lived there for 4 years, 4.5 years. And then we said, and there was really good AA there, and I really miss those women from Arizona, and I just can't believe I'm not divorced, but anyway, so it's, we thought it'd be a really, really good idea to move to Chicago to be close to his parents and his sister and their kids and the cousins, and it sounds so cool, and it's all going to be this really cool thing, right? And all family's going to be together. Well, we moved there and we didn't realize that they had their own dysfunction junction going on, and then we had our own, you know, stuff going on. And it was a delusion. And it was just hilarious because I was like, your family is freaking cuckoo. Like, I had put them on a pedestal because they're, you know, his dad's sober, his mom's an Al-Anon, and his sister's whatever, but they're a little cuckoo. They're a little cuckoo, but like covertly cuckoo, where my family's overtly cuckoo, you know, like you know what you're getting when you walk into my family is a bunch of crazy, you know, where they're very under the carpet, and I don't do under the carpet. That makes me insane when it's all like passive aggressive and funkafortified. And so I said, whoa, this is just not, you know. And he's like, I just shoveled, you know, all this snow. He was miserable there. He's like, we're out of here. So we had some friends who lived here from Arizona, and they got us here. They were in the program, and they got us here. And wow, yeah, we've been here for 5 years now, and it's just so weird because I so think I know what things are going to look like. I know you guys don't relate to this, you know. I think I know the way life should look and the way things should be, and they're just not. They're just not, you know. And at the same time, that's so okay. It's just okay, you know. When I walked in here, I could not imagine. My sponsor told me, she's like, you're so sick, you could get validation off the Pope. And I thought, what does that even mean? And she's like, you're just sick. Like, you validate off, boy, I mean, inanimate objects. It doesn't matter. You will try to get something from them. Like, you have nothing inside. And I was like, I'm a little offended by that, first and foremost. And then I thought about it, and I thought, she's so right, you know. Like, I'm so nothing inside. I just thought so nothing of me, and I don't think so nothing of me today, you know. I walk into places with my head up. I don't have to be ashamed. I'm not ashamed. I have a good life, you know. I walk a good life. And it's funny because I think, oh, I drive like a grandma and everybody makes fun of me. And I think, I don't care if people see me out on the road. I don't care. I'm not some wild, you know, driver telling people off. Like, just except for the turn on Eagle, when you turn off Eagle into Rose Creek. I don't understand that, that people don't understand that you don't, the person making a right has the right of way. You don't make a left when they're going right. So somebody almost hit my car and I called them a name and my kids were like, Mom! I'm like, I know, right? That was terrible. So, you know, it's really weird because I've learned how to lie in this program to my children, and I didn't think I don't lie. And I so totally lie to my kids, and it's very uncomfortable, you know? Like, I lied and said the skate place wasn't open. They couldn't have her party there, and it's because we couldn't afford it. So, you know, I had to tell her that. And, yeah, you know, I thought that, you know, with 15 years of sobriety that I should, you know, I should have a full bank account. We should have consistency. My husband's job should be consistent. I should be totally okay inside with my kids. I should want to do arts and crafts. I'm so selfless. I'm so this. Not the case, guys, for this alcoholic. And you know what? That's okay, because it is progress, not perfection. I don't do this thing perfect, you know? I do this thing, and I do this thing daily. This is my life, you know? I'm an alcoholic, and it's funny because I was telling a girl I sponsor, I said, I'm so grateful I'm an alcoholic. I have a living solution to my problems. I cannot, left to my own devices, if I was an alcoholic, I'd be out there going, what the, you know what I mean? Like trying to get by. I'm alcoholic. Yes, I have to stay abstinent, but I get a life. I get to have these steps. I have a sponsor. I have places to go. I don't have to go to like a church group and like my girlfriends are like, oh, I love, don't you love Tuesday night, our women's group? I'm like, I have Tuesday night every day of the week. You know, like people don't get that. Like I have that because I'm an alcoholic. I have you people, you know, and I have a solution to my life. And even, you know, and the thing is I'm not one to I share what's going on with me because that's how I stay sober. If I don't do that, if I just try to like pretend that everything's okay, I'm gonna get loaded, you know, because this stuff with my kids is really it plagues me. It's my full-time freaking job, and they're at school like 8 hours a day, and I still have issues, you know. Like I'm not normal, and I know I'm not normal, you know, and I don't claim to be normal, but I like who I am, you know. I like who I am, you know. And I got lots of room for growth, and I'm so excited about that because I do the work. That will happen. You know, I trust and believe from my experiences that when I do the work, amazing things happen. And if I stick around, I always heard, don't give up 5 minutes before the miracle. I was like, are you kidding me? 5 minutes before. But you know what? It's so true, because I'll get to see that person walk through the doors that's been struggling and their face is lit up because they finally got it, you know, and see that person take that 1 year chip. It's ginormous, you know. That is the stuff that fills my soul, you know, is watching the people in these rooms get it and change and grow. It's just beyond, you know, and that's all I can say. It's beyond my wildest dreams. It's beyond anything I could have fathomed. And life is good, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous, so thanks for letting me be here.